Oh, well, we figured it out. It turns out that on some of this equipment, you have to turn on the volume. So it's one of these situations where volume means everything. So if you don't have the volume turned on, the volume doesn't broadcast. So as we're going through this aftermath of Katrina, we've got various of the people who have been tragically displaced and had to be rescued, and watching helicopters fly by with no assistance, and millions of dollars worth of so-called assistance seems to be disappearing. This is some audio footage from a I think it's a television station, WAFB, in New Orleans, and they're interviewing a woman named Charlene Neville, and apparently she was trapped on a roof for about a week, maybe 9 days or so. So it runs about 6 minutes, and it describes, as I mentioned before, the problem of, well, all of the horrible rumors that certain of the major media kept backing.
I was in my house when everything first started.
Well, yeah, everybody tried to get it.
I was in the house. Yes, I lived in the Bywater area of Tidewater, New Orleans. When the hurricane came, it blew all of the left side of my house, the north side of my house, and the water was coming in my house in torrents. I had my neighbor, an elderly man who's my neighbor, and myself in the house and with our dogs and cats, and we were trying to stay out of the water, but the water was coming in too fast. So we ended up having to leave the house. We left the house and we went up on the roof of a school. I took a crowbar and I burst the door open on the roof of the school to help people, to get them up onto the roof of the school. Later on, we found a flatboat and we went around in the neighborhood in a flatboat, getting people out of their houses and bringing them to the school. We found all the food that we could, and we cooked and we fed people. But then things started getting really bad. By the second day, the people that were there, that we were feeding and everything, we had no more food, no water. We had nothing. And other people were coming into our neighborhood. We were watching the helicopters go across the bridge and airlift other people out, but they would hover over us and tell us, hi, and that would be all. They wouldn't drop us any food, any water, nothing. Alligators were eating people. They had all kinds of stuff in the water. They had babies floating in the water. We had to walk over hundreds of bodies of dead people. People that we tried to save from the hospitals, and from the old folks' homes. I tried to get the police to help us, but I realized we rescued a lot of police officers in the flatboat from the district police station. The guy who was driving the boat, he rescued a lot of them and brought them to different places where they could be saved. We understood that the police couldn't help us, but we couldn't understand why the National Guard and them couldn't help us, because we kept seeing them, but they never would stop and help us. Finally, it got to be too much. I just took all of the people that I could. I had two old women in wheelchairs with no legs, that I rode them from down there in that night ward to the French quarters, and I went back and I got more people. There were groups of us, you know, there was about 24 of us, and we kept going back and forth and rescuing whoever we could get and bringing them to the French quarters, because we heard that there was phones in the French quarters and that there wasn't any water. And they were right, there was phones, but we couldn't get through. I found some police officers. I told them that a lot of us women had been raped down there by guys who had come the neighborhood where we were, that were helping us to save people, but other men. And they came and they started raping women, and they started killing. And I don't know who these people were. I'm not going to tell you I know who they were, because I don't. But what I want people to understand is that if we had not been left down there like the animals that they were treating us like, all of those things wouldn't have happened. People are trying to say that we stayed next to them because we wanted to be rioting and we wanted to do this. And we didn't have resources to get out. We had no way to leave. When they gave the evacuation order, if we could have left, we would have left. There are still thousands and thousands of people trapped in the homes down in the downtown area. when we finally did get to town, in the Ninth Ward, and not just in my neighborhood, but in other neighborhoods in the Ninth Ward, there are a lot of people who are still trapped down here. Old people, young people, babies, pregnant women. I mean, nobody's helping them. And I want people to realize that we did not stay in the city so that we could steal and loot and commit crimes. A lot of those young men lost their minds because the helicopters would fly over us and they wouldn't stop. We'd do SOS on the flashlights. We'd do everything. And it came to a point, it really did come to a point where these young men were so frustrated that they did start shooting. They weren't trying to hit the helicopters. They figured maybe they weren't seeing. Maybe if they hear this gunfire, they will stop then. But that didn't help us. Nothing like that helped us. Finally, I got to Canal Street with all of my people that I had saved from back then. It was a whole group of us. I don't want them arresting nobody else. I broke the window in an RTA bus. I never learned how to drive a bus in my life. I got in that bus. I loaded all of those people in wheelchairs and in everything else into that bus. And we drove. We drove. And millions of people was trying to get me to help them to get on the bus with me. No, you're right.
Thank you.
Even though we don't have Diamond Dave in the studio with us or calling in, we are lucky enough to see a report. Apparently, some of the Food Not Bombers down there have... here's a report. Vincent of Blast Furnace Radio out in Pittsburgh was able to put together something for us. And here is... Too much to look at. Oh, I see. Is this an audio file or not? I thought it was a text file that I was going to read, and then I'd be able to read it to you. But, well, I guess not. I guess we're just going to have to download it and play it.
This is Vincent Irene from Blast Furnace Radio. And who are you and where are we?
This is Diamond Dave from the Enemy Combatant Radio, IndieBay.org, on the... We're in the center of the community coming together. I'm looking down now at the what's happening here. It's about 4 o'clock in the afternoon at the here at the new Waveland Cafe just outside of Waveland, Mississippi. When New Orleans, when the first day of the, they said New Orleans, the bullet missed New Orleans. This is where it came, right here. We're in the center of Great District. They said this town is uninhabited and uninhabitable. But in fact, people are coming back. They're putting up tents, and I'm in the middle of the greatest free store in the world. People are coming here doing shopping, getting their needs because they've lost everything. And then they come to eat here, come to share some food for the body, mind, and spirit here at the New Wave Land Cafe. And people, Food Not Bombs, is coming rolling in. Vincent coming from Pittsburgh Food Not Bombs. I see Arizona Food Not Bombs, Portland and Tucson. The Rainbow family is well represented, and we're coming together to share food. And today we've been feeding a couple thousand people a day, Vincent. But today I can feel really community breakthrough here. This is really happening. It's really cool, and it's really glad to be here.
Well, you know, we were actually in New Orleans, and they've cleaned it up a bit. Of course, nobody's there. It was forcibly removed. But how and why was this place hit so hard?
Well, they say that they missed the bullet. Remember, before the announcement, the levee is broken. When the levees are broken, they said the bullet. Oh, New Orleans dodged the bullet, and where the bullet came, right here, right as we speak, right through here, came 150 mile an hour winds, came a wave, a surge of water, and we're about a mile from the water here, from the Gulf Coast, and it went on for another 10 miles, a wave of water, a surge of water over 25 feet. Everything you see was 25 feet underwater. Those trees, the trees snapped off like matchstick. Houses collapsed. You could just see the houses collapse. This is total destruction from here. Well, in fact, from all the way back from back into Louisiana, all the way out through Biloxi, Gulfport, on into Alabama, this wolf came through, and people were on the third and fourth, on the, up on the roofs. Some people had left, some people stayed, but everything was wrecked and torn down. This is the power of nature. And now here we are. Oh, get some artworks going up there in the wall behind the serving, and now people are coming back, and they're working on the places. People are tending, putting up tents where their houses used to be, and the uninhabitable is becoming inhabited, and people are working together in a really good way. And we're really, it's really great, it's that we have the opportunity, Food Not Bombs, Rainbow Family, to be doing this kitchen, which is something we do, is what, we're doing what we do best. And I want to say that there's a lot of stuff, I mean, plenty of stuff's coming through. We got acres of clothes. We got all kinds of stuff. We got, it's a big free store. But what's really needed is people to lend a hand, to hop in their cars and come on down. There's a few other places, and lend a hand. This is the time to, because there's plenty of money coming in. I think human help is really what's important here. Out of the establishment.
So, I mean, we're here, and this is just, used to be an enormous, shopping center, and all this heavy equipment's coming through, the military, FEMA, the insurance companies. But in terms of the Food Not Bombs and the Rainbow people here, this seems like much more of a social setting than some depressing soup kitchen.
Well, this, of course, this is a New Wave Cafe. We're encouraging live music and poetry and whatever. No, we're definitely bringing a spirit that this is food for the body, mind, and spirit around here. People come, and this is a place to come and smooch, hang out, get some coffee, get some cold drink, and enjoy each other's company. So that is a lot different, and it's definitely important that that should be happening, for sure.
The sense I've got from people is that this is going to be happening for a while. It's not something that's going to go away for a week or so.
Oh, no, this has got to go on for months. These houses, these neighborhoods, these towns, this land have been totally destroyed. There's just piles of rubble, very little inhabitable, if any, structures going around here. The roofs are off. This is absolute devastation, but the human beings are coming back and re-inhabiting where they once were, their place, their common ground, their special place here.
Well, thank you, Diamond Dave. If people want to find out how what's going on here in Waveland, Blast Furnace Radio can put you in contact with some good phone numbers. Again, people are needed here for this relief work, not just food and bricks and mortar, but also to develop a social setting, to develop a sense of healing in the midst of this destruction.
And we're encouraging a community. Of course, there are others. There's other contingents, Food Not Bombs contingents. Algiers has been open on the West Bank of New Orleans. That's been open, and there's some contingents out there. And there's another group that's attempting to inhabit to go and reach out to the people in the 5th and the 9th Ward, which is the worst of the worst of the worst. So there's tentacles going out. Also, check out the Veterans for Peace website. They're the ones who were in Crawford, Texas, and they've come here, and you were at their camp, at the Vets for Peace camp. And they have a website, too, you can go to. Just Google it, Vets for Peace.
Okay, thank you, Diamond Dave. And Diamond Dave is everywhere. Please come to Waveland, Mississippi.
Yeah, it's funny that Vincent mentions he's everywhere. He really is. Rubble happened to turn a corner in Washington, D.C., or was it New York? New York. Yeah, he was up in Harlem in New York about a year ago and turned the corner, and bam, Diamond Dave just standing right there. So you are listening to Indie Bay Radio here in San Francisco. We are doing a little coverage on the Katrina. I mean, my God, even the major neocon radio stations are starting to wonder whether or not there's anything logical that's going on with the Bush administration. The idea that that he could pretend that he was providing some sort of a service is a joke at best. Most people, frankly, believe that he's simply working with the carpetbaggers, the new carpetbaggers, that they intentionally allowed the rescue operation to get so fouled up that there was the greatest amount of damage. And with that, they'd be able to cash in on the financing as well as cash in on land grabs like normal carpetbaggers do. Well, here's another web file. This also comes from Vincent Irini in Blast Furnace Radio. And if you like to listen to internet radio, do listen to Blast Furnace on occasion. He's based out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And Blast Furnace Radio is a service of, well, he's been involved with the Berrigan Brothers and many of the people working with, peace and justice issues through the Catholic Workers' House out there in Pittsburgh, and certainly appreciate his help. So this is another audio file that he helped put together. He's been doing reporting down there for the duration.
This is Blast Furnace Radio, and somehow we have been magically transported to New Orleans. We're right outside of Covington, and we are in a disaster area, probably more of a disaster because of the government than the natural disaster itself. And I am with some anarchist monarchists who will tell us what happened today.
What, it's all me? I'm passing this around.
Pass it around.
All right, well, somebody else start, man. All right, here you go, Patrick.
We got up this morning to discover that Pittsburgh Food Not Bombs had arrived, along with Blast Furnace Radio, which we're coming to you on. And we got up and had an extremely long meeting for what it was, but it was good, it was positive, and it worked out that we'd actually send a crew into New Orleans proper today for the first time. And so we slapped a meal together, despite the, it was a little bit weak, it was spaghetti, but, it was a meal nonetheless.
Fucking good spaghetti.
People were digging it.
It was good, but it wasn't the level of involvement.
You're humble, sir. You're humble.
Whatever, you fucking...
Hippie.
Oh, yeah.
He's going. Long story short, we hit a number of neighborhoods. We fortuitously ran into a friend who's fixing her house and got names and addresses of people who needed help, and just springboarded there from one neighborhood to another. We had a really amazing encounter in our first one with the Bayview? Bywater Relief Center, which is just a house and kind of a little...
They didn't call that.
Yeah, a shack in a, kind of dumpy neighborhood, but it was populated by
beer
amazing,
porn.
Funny
lots
people, beer porn, yeah, very gay people. But they're great. They're super rad, and they're going to throw a drag show for us. And so we're going to go back and participate in their drag show. It's going to be totally hot. I can pass it from here.
I don't really feel like talking at all. All I have to say is monster trucks, porn, beer, and drag shows were great. And the Irish reporter that I met was pretty awesome, too. I'll say more later. I don't like talking.
I wish I could think of something smart to say, but I've been drinking, well, alas, I've had a couple of these Miller High Lifes, and
I'm not going to put some crazy on, dude.
No, but check it out. Whatever, man. All of the fucking critic here. It was a great day. We fed some folks a hot meal, and a lot of folks said it was the first hot meal they'd had since the storm came. Actually, everyone said it was the first hot meal that they'd had since the storm came, and folks have been sticking it out there for weeks, just kind of, holding their own, and, it's pretty clear through the, intense militarization of the city, roadblocks everywhere, National Guard walking around with machine guns and stuff, that, they're wanting, they're wanting folks out, it's, But it's inspiring to see folks who are, you know, tough enough to stick it out and you know, rebuild their communities, rebuild their neighborhoods, rebuild their city. And it's feels pretty special to, like, be a part of that and to be able to support those folks. This is, you know, like, a historic thing that's going on down here. It's eerie to be in New Orleans where, you know, a city of you know, what, a million people probably? And, you know, and there's nobody there. Now, there are people there, but it's really quiet. There aren't very many people there. Most folks have evacuated. And the only folks that you see most of the time are the National Guard and the police, and you don't see any relief agencies. Where are the relief agencies? Where is the Red Cross? The Red Cross aren't there. You know, everyone we talked to said they hadn't seen anybody, you know, since the storm hit. But there are folks that are sticking it out, residents, you know. Some folks are coming back to rebuild, hopefully enough of an influx will come with enough support that the developers who want to come in and milk the rebuilding of the city of New Orleans will have, you know, some pretty tough political opposition mobilized to support folks who are still there. That's all I got to say. It's a great town. I've never been to New Orleans before. It's a great town.
Dude, pass them up.
I think we went the wrong way.
Go, man.
Right on, dude. All right, I think you got to turn around, actually. We got to get on 25 North. All right, I know you guys don't want our car directions on your indie media broadcast, but, yeah, Hefe broke it down pretty good there. It's it's an amazing thing, man. I mean, the city is, you know, it's kind of under siege right now. It's an occupied city. It's kind of like a Baghdad thing, and you know, right now we're at the point where some of the people are trying to get back on their feet and get their lives going again in New Orleans, and it's really, really important to help them do that, because if these folks don't reestablish in New Orleans and get the real people back in there, it's going to be Halliburton Garden Condominium Complex before too long. This is an old-fashioned land grab. This is an opportunistic thing that the developers are seeing. It's a chance to gentrify the whole city, which, you know, they wanted to do for a long time anyway. You know, New Orleans has been trying to chase out its poor people and its black people, its, you know, its artists and its activists, and this seems like the perfect opportunity to do it, and it's not going to happen. We can so much see it today. We drove around the whole city today, and we served out Food Not Bombs hot food and gave out relief supplies to, you know, tens and tens of people, and they were all saying the same thing, that they're there and they're not going away and they're committed to being there. They're going to bring the city back online. And, you know, right now it's about 60,000 troops and maybe 5,000 to 10,000 people. But it's coming back. You know, we're going to plug in. We're looking to set up a Food Not Bombs kitchen so we can keep on bringing food out to folks. And more than just food, giving them a sense of hope and solidarity that we're still there with them. And, you know, I would just say to folks out there listening to this, come to New Orleans, man. If you're a progressive and if you have a vision, this is a chance to put some of it in practice. These people don't just want to rebuild the same old. They want to rebuild but do it right. They want to put cooperative structures and sustainable infrastructure together. And this is a chance for all of us to be part of something really historic, really unique, and really special. You know, these people have a lot of spirit, and I'm really pleased and proud to have been a small part of it. Back to you, Vincent.
And that says it all. Here we are on the ground at Louisiana. Blast Furnace Radio is trying to be a part of all of this in this disaster area, trying to see those who have been asked to leave and now are on their way back to build a new society in the shell of the old. Again, this is Blast Furnace Radio in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, melting down the guns.
Rock and roll!
Forging a new future.
And we certainly thank Vincent of Blast Furnace Radio for providing that. He's doing coverage throughout the area. And we, on the phone with us live, we do have Malik Rahim. Hello, Malik. I understand you're not in New Orleans at this point. You're up in, what did you say, Ithaca, New York?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, great. So your constant good reporting, is that the reason why you're up there, or was this something that was scheduled in advance?
No, no, it came up during, right after the hurricane.
So the exposure that you've been able to do is certainly giving you fame far and wide. That's great. And Ithaca is a good city.
It is fame because the main reason why I'm here, I'm trying to drum up support for the community.
Well, you know, one of the things that Ithaca is famous for, Ralph Nader has talked about this for probably 8 years, and I don't know just how many years they've been doing it, but Ithaca is famous for having its own alternative currency. And one of the most horrible things that FEMA is known for is promising money and then never delivering. So when they, communities that are hard hit with disasters create their own local currency, it's very important. For example, when the earthquake happened in San Francisco in 1989, FEMA didn't even bother showing up for almost 3 weeks. And so the people of Santa Cruz printed their own money. They created their own, I believe they called it the Santa Cruz Monarch. And
well, David, it seemed like that's FEMA's track record, because they haven't really showed up into New Orleans until after 3 weeks.
Well, that's right. Yeah, we heard that just the other day, and they actually haven't gotten an office in New Orleans yet.
Yeah.
I think I was listening to Air America. They were looking for a suite that had something like 500 offices, and they don't even have 200 employees. So, yeah, I mean, they have this Cadillac taste, or maybe more like Rolls Royce tastes, you know, for a disaster center. So apparently they're trying to hook up. Maybe they're doing a bidding war with the landlord, seeing which one of them is going to cave first for the best deal. But
that's all you have to look at is what happened in Baton Rouge after the hurricane. The sales of homes in Baton Rouge went up to almost 500 a day.
Oh, you mean rentals?
No, I'm actual people buying homes from out of New Orleans, going there and buying homes.
Oh, you're not talking dollar price. You're talking about actually buying quantities of homes. 500 homes a day were sold in Baton Rouge?
Oh, yes.
My God.
Yes.
Yeah, that's there's money in them there carpetbaggers, I guess. Maybe they're stealing it in Iraq and reinvesting in America. Who knows? But Ithaca money, though, if you have a chance to ask people about that, maybe they can hook you up with some interesting print job, because it would seem to me that that the creation of alternative money would really help down there.
Well, that's one of the things I'm going to definitely, David, I thank you for bringing that to my attention, because, tomorrow I'm going to have basically the day to speak with individuals within the community, within the progressive community of Ithaca. So that's one of the things I would definitely ask them about.
Yeah, no trouble. And now tell us, you left, you flew out of New Orleans just today, it sounds like.
Yes, I left this morning.
All right, tell us, we haven't interviewed you in over a week. How are things, and is there anything else we can send your way?
I'm going to tell you, we have our medical clinic have saw almost 600 people. We have delivered well over 2,000 gallons of fresh water, maybe about 5 tons of ice, and maybe close to 8 to 10 tons of food. Since we spoke last. And still we have yet to have any type of meeting or have any state, city, or federal officials to come to our clinic, to come over and see what we are doing. But what we have been harassed by the police, and now the Department of Health Services is trying to close our clinic down.
Well, I wonder if, let's see, it would seem to me that maybe, I know some people in the medical community, maybe there's a way that you could get the, like Louisiana Department of Public Health to give a an accreditation. Did I hear right? Maybe
that's what they're trying to lift on the 25th. Because see, they had waived it, but now they're planning on lifting it.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And I know it's due in part because of our health clinic, because we're the only health clinic that's functioning in the state that's outside of the Department of Health. No one has said anything about the fact that we was the first on-the-ground health clinic to be established after the hurricane. No one is saying that we have seen everyone from that's suffering from everything from mosquito bites to gangrene. No one has said anything that we have saw every person from every age, even to addressing wounds that have been inflicted upon military personnel. No one is talking about this, but that's all they could come around and do is have the Red Cross come in and have the police to detain practical nurses who is coming to work with us and confiscate the material that they are bringing to us. They have literally now come out on a daily basis, as it's seen now, not to see what we have done or how we have set it up and to speak about what we are doing, but only trying to find reason after reason to close us down. They say they cannot work with us because it's in a mosque. And that's a separation of church and state. But at the same time, they're working out of Jimmy Swaggart's camp up in Baton Rouge. So, I mean, it's constantly that double standard. And it seems like since the military is pulling out of more of the patrols and is going back to the city, now come the same old dastardly deeds, you know, where they're coming in no longer, you know, asking how can they help, but, you know, what are you doing?
Well, you know,
I'm very fearful that they're going to come in and shut our clinic down. And we're the only clinic that's, even though now the Army have a clinic and a so-called Mr. Mardi Gras, Blaine Kern, have a clinic. But each one of them is filled with armed guards and razor wire, so which is the reason why most people don't want to go to them. But if you come to our clinic, you'll see signs of saying no weapons allowed, and people are coming. We service on an average of 60 people a day.
Now, did I hear right? I may have heard you on an interview about a week ago. Is this the one that's set up in a mosque?
Yes.
Okay, great. And then, so now, typically for a hospital or a clinic, you know, it's got to have enough facilities that are like stainless steel, places to clean up things, autoclaves. Are they trying to claim that you don't have certain types of, like, sterilization equipment, or is it just, for example, is that something that you need to have down there in order to keep it going, or is it... Okay, go ahead.
Yes, we have in, most of the things that they are telling us is that we don't have doctors that is sanctioned under the state of Louisiana, but, you know... Under the state of emergency, we didn't have to. We had doctors to come in from as far as France and work in our clinic, you know. And as for the materials and things, veterans for peace, pastors for peace, and then just we have, I can't think of Michael's last name, but he's out of San Francisco. And we have a large contingent of nurses and doctors from San Francisco that is now in New Orleans. They are right at the clinic making things happen. So it's not the idea, you know what I mean? whatever hurdle they put before us, once we overcome it, there's another hurdle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that's one of the things. I was, as you were mentioning, well, just before we got you on the air, there was there's an interview that apparently played on, is there a WAFB TV down in New Orleans? Yeah, there was a WAFB TV that interview with a woman named Charmaine Neville, and she was describing what it was like to be stuck on a roof for something like 9 days. And I won't go into the gruesome details, but the idea that she and the people that she was with ended up rescuing a certain number of local, I think was a District 5 police officers. And so in the early days of Food Not Bombs after the 1989 earthquake, it's Keith McHenry claims that he was feeding police officers when they had nowhere to go. And so I'm wondering if there's a way that you can get the local administration to get some of their family treated if they're not being covered. You know, some sort of way in which you can prove that your clinic is providing a community service, that all of a sudden makes it intolerable for it to be shut down if these, you know, if even the administration are using the clinic. So, and if so, if they're willing to step up on the line and say, you know, this is a good service and it needs to be done. So, that's just a suggestion. Try to get
them. Well, I'm going to tell you, everyone in the community knows what the kind of job we are doing, that not only with the health clinic, of cleaning the storm drains, of helping to repair roofs by putting up tarps on the elderly and the poor and the disenfranchised homes. They're seeing us with our mobile clinic and with our medics on wheels, on bikes. You know, I mean, they're seeing what we are doing. They know what we are doing. But it's just the idea that now, since they're telling people to come back, the last thing they want to see or want anybody to hear is that the very first clinic to operate in New Orleans in Algiers after Katrina hit was our clinic, was one that we set up, and that we set it up in less than 3 days, and it's still, after 3 weeks, the health clinic that the city has is still chained, that a body was able to lay and fester in the sun in front of that same clinic for over 2 weeks. It took the aim, it took Democracy Now to come and actually show it in order for them to remove that body. So it's not what we are doing, because they know what we're doing. They know what kind of service we are providing. It's that they don't want to see that exist. It seems like they're more concerned in trying to salvage some type of credibility than to save people's lives.
Well, I don't doubt that. I'm frankly, you know, I'm still very suspicious. And, you know, you haven't been able to hear talk radio around the nation, but most people are now very suspicious of the Bush administration. There were two different aspects. The bankruptcy bill that got passed about 6 months ago said that a natural disaster could not be an excuse for you cannot use a natural disaster as an excuse to claim bankruptcy. And then, of course, this Supreme Court ruling about a month and a half ago that said that the government can seize everybody's land for economic reasons. And so this whole idea of looking at New Orleans as a site for Bush carpetbaggers and, you know, snap up.
Oh, they are in. And they are in by the groves. We have seen more Texas license plates with contractors coming in doing the renovation. And with the sad part of it is that in the Algiers Naval Base. Now, I'm not talking about private industry. I'm talking about a government facility, a naval base, that we're seeing truckloads of Texas vans coming in to do the construction work with undocumented aliens coming in to do the work, basically from Mexico. And I know they're not paying these people prevailing wages, but I bet you they are getting prevailing contracts. You know, and it's sad that how in this type of situation that the U.S. government would allow that to happen, would allow such exploitation to happen on its facility.
Yeah, that was another one that people have been very, that's hitting the talk radio circuit too. Even the most redneck knows that when you get rid of something like the Davis-Bacon Act, that it's, you know, you're talking about the economic looting of a region. You know, the tonight Farm Aid
is going beyond economic looting. It's economic genocide.
Well, that's right. Tonight or today was Farm Aid, as you're probably well aware. You know, Willie Nelson and think all of the famous rock stars that have been involved in the Farm Aid effort for 20 years. Today is the 20th anniversary of Farm Aid, and that was because of the looting of the savings and loans by Papa Bush. And from the first day that Ronald Reagan took office to the last day of George Bush the first, in that 12 years' time, 3/4 of American farmers went under. And so that's what they did with the farmers 20 years ago, they're doing to New Orleans at this moment. And hurricane season isn't even over. So it's
that's right.
Yeah, so we're but it's the talk radio circuits around the nation are it's tougher and tougher to get anybody to apologize for Bush. Everybody is very suspicious of him, and the word sabotage is coming up more frequently in discussions of how Bush could be so incompetent. Incompetent is actually the least of what they're saying about him. You know, he's just...
Well, I'm going to tell you, don't just say Bush. It's also, if we're going to talk about then how incompetent the entire spectrum was, from our mayor to our governor, then to the president. But we can't allow one to escape, you know, what has happened, you know, because this, and it's just my belief that this going to go down in history as the most shameful act perpetuated by local, state, and federal government upon its people.
Well, you mean similar to Fiddling While Rome Burns?
Oh, yes.
It's my understanding that Nero actually had the fire started, and then he fiddled. So,
well, some people say that Levy was intentionally blowed up.
Yeah, I know, and we've been hearing that, and I think that probably if... the earthquake monitors would be the way to determine if something like that happened. So it's whether or not someone can go to the seismic readings to determine that. I think I've heard as many as 7 different explosions, something like that. So it,
yes.
Yeah, there's definitely something odd about the situation. All right, well, so let's see. So medical is definitely something to lean on. It sounds like the electrical grid is faulty in some ways. Diamond Dave Whitaker he just left a report. Apparently he's over in, I've forgotten the name of the town he's in. Is it Waveland maybe?
Yes, and I'm going to tell you, I just want your readers to, your listeners to know that old Diamond Dave was Johnny on the spot to help us.
Well, he always has been. He's everywhere, and he's a great service to humanity, I tell you.
That's right.
Yeah. So he gave a report up there where the whole, that whole area is essentially flattened. And so I'm wondering, is that an area that is a mixed population, or is it predominantly white or black, or is there, you know...
area is it?
It sounded like it was Waveland, a little north.
Yeah, Waveland is, that's in Mississippi, you know, and that's where it was hardest hit.
Okay. Well, I'm just wondering if there's some sort of a way. One of the reports that came out, you know, of course, Bush is doing his mealy mouth thing, that the governor and the mayor did not notify him that they needed aid. But it's now coming out that Bush and his cronies contacted Alabama and Mississippi's governors. They called them at least four times in advance, trying to get them to fill out the paperwork right. But they apparently didn't do anything like that to the state of Louisiana. So they were actively working on the Republican states of Mississippi and Alabama. So their mealy-mouthed kind of contentions that that the paperwork wasn't filled out right is suspicious at least. But it raises this. Well, obviously, those states have been looted for centuries, and so the average little people of Mississippi, black or white, are not going to get a penny of what's going on. And so the fact that Dave's over there in Waveland, I'm just wondering if if there's been any sort unity that's going on, racially. It's been obviously a bad situation for centuries, but just wondering if there's any kind of improvement.
Well, I think it is, because what we have the progressive community throughout America that is coming down. There's reports that certain segments of Mississippi are going to be without lights for up to maybe 6 months.
So again,
you have these areas. Right now, most attention is upon New Orleans. But you have to remember that the entire Gulf Coast was basically impacted in some way by hurricanes, whether it's in Florida by the repeated hits that they have by different hurricanes, Alabama or Mississippi. Louisiana have been lucky. We were spared this time, because if Katrina would have actually hit New Orleans, we would have maybe 100,000 people dead easy.
Yeah.
Well, look what it done, and it didn't hit us. Look what happened to this one levee when we only caught not even half of the blunt that Mississippi caught. What would have happened if we would have caught the full blunt of Katrina? I mean, how many levees would have broke? How many people would have drowned? How long, and what would be the environmental impact on it? Because right now, with the contracts that we're given to pump the water out of the city, in the haste of them making these lucrative millions, no one is talking about what will be the lasting ramification of this toxic water that we are pumping back out into our Gulf Stream, into our bayous, into our marshland. What will be the lasting impact? And I'm going to tell you, some things that we could be doing right now to save our wetland, which is our first buffer. Everybody talking now about building a levee that can withstand a Category 5. But if we would go out there and try to save our wetlands, that's our first buffer. What are we doing with all these trees that we are tearing, that we are now hauling away? Where are we putting that? Are we using them in our wetland to retain, to help us retain and build this area up? Because during Christmas, that's what we do with the old Christmas trees. We put them out there to help retain, to hold a silt, and then to help build that first buffer. I mean, what are we doing with it now? Why isn't the city concentrating on basically cleaning out the storm drains. Yesterday we had a rain. If we wouldn't have went out in Algiers and started cleaning up the storm drain, we don't know what could have happened. You know, and like you said earlier, we're still in hurricane season. You know, what preparation are we making right now to make sure that as we invite and telling people to come back to New Orleans in hurricane season, what type of safeguards do we have in place? Because as they come in, if another hurricane come in and hit, I mean, we cannot use the same evacuation routes.
Well, that's right. It raises that issue of whether or not so many roads and bridges are down that it's going to be difficult to evacuate again. You know, you raised an important issue just a minute ago, restoration of the wetlands. There are a number of different, for example, I come from St. Louis, and Missouri has got a very good native plant society, people very interested in restoration of, you know, the infrastructure of God's green earth. And so I'm wondering if it would be a good thing to...
Please, David, get in touch with them. Give them my number. Have them to call us.
All right.
Please, you know, we'll come and visit them. You know, so that we could see, because something got to be done. We can no longer sit idly by and say our so-called leaders or government officials going to solve these problems. You know, we can no longer see it, because we see now, you know, this government is strictly the wheels that turn it is greed. You know, and I mean greed from every level. You know, I mean, it's sad when you see, you know, I mean, whereas you ride down the streets and you see individuals, because I'm going to tell you, David, if a person would have left New Orleans, they could get financial assistance. But as for those who stayed, they get nothing.
Right. Well, that's
like it was like it was. You know, the incentive was for you to leave. If you don't leave, you can't. We can't help you.
That's right. That's the nature of the carpet bagging. Yeah. It's and then you know it's bait and switch as well. I've been reviewing some TV footage that I took of, you know, we were switching around the channels in the immediate days afterward. And when Bush came up with his little credit card, $2,000 credit card for evacuees, all of the credit cards were issued in the state of Texas.
In the state of Texas.
Right. So, but now the reports are coming in that many of those credit cards are, one guy mentioned that he got up to $700 and then he found out that his account was frozen. So it's, when they show them on the TV screen, Chase Manhattan Bank, famous old, Bush crony bank, and very involved in all sorts of organized crime, money laundering. So if Chase Manhattan Bank is essentially, if $700 is the average out of the 2,000 that they're offering people, Chase Manhattan is getting 2,000 or two-thirds of that amount, and then people are essentially getting bait and switched into a small change out of it. So it's an important issue about whether or not these people are intentionally profiteering. And then it, of course, gets into the absolute need to create our own money. Again, you know, I don't know how late you're going to stay there tomorrow, but if you get a chance while you're over there to just ask around about it's called Ithaca Dollars. And
I'm going to definitely... I know I'm not speaking at Cornell. I believe I'm scheduled to speak at 4:30.
Okay. So you'll have a good part of the morning.
I have all the tomorrow.
Yeah.
To find out about it.
You might even, if you're walking in the downtown area, you might even get a chance. I understand many of the merchants carry it, so they'll probably have some kind of decal in the front window. But I understand there's a local office, and it's well, I won't get into you in the details of it, but it started sort of as a barter arrangement with a sort of a computer tracking of, you know, if somebody wanted their porch repaired and somebody knew carpentry skills, they would kind of match them up that way. But then they got into the idea that they would actually print their own money. And they've gone through a number of different very high-quality paper, watermark, good quality designs. And I wonder if Ithaca would be interested in either printing up a special design for New Orleans or, you know, sending a number of people down there so that – and it's interesting, too, because – like I was saying, with the idea of, you know, whites and blacks, and for example, they're also talking about the huge number of, they were saying up to 20% of Hondurans, or 20% of the population in New Orleans were Hondurans, and they're really torn up about where these people have ended up. But anyway, you know, a cross-cultural use of money, is certainly going to create more unity than trying to beg for some scraps from Bush and his cronies.
Yeah.
And that begging for scraps is where the institution of, racism comes from. So, you know, they'll promise you scraps if you just side with them. So the idea of coming up with an alternative currency is going to be real important. One other thing you mentioned, too, if Mississippi is, you were saying that some sections of Mississippi may not have electricity for up to 6 months?
Yes.
All right. So I'm just wondering if there'd be a way of getting elders, you know, back into the mix by training people about how, you know, what it takes to dry food, you know, growing, you know, side yard gardens, you know, living without refrigeration, because that's going to be a major aspect. You know, civilization essentially has hugely advanced by being able to preserve food for longer than a, you know, a week or so.
Oh, yes, and that's another part that Ithaca is known for. You know, and which is one of the reasons why I'm also here and came a day early and going to stay a day afterward just to speak to them about some of the other alternative resources that, that we have individuals here developing. So, again, you know, you're absolutely right. We have to find out. We have to develop. One of the things that we are looking at is solar. Solar energy as a means of helping individuals in this crisis and in these crisis areas. We're telling individuals right now that what we have learned here in at least in Algiers, what we have learned that it's not something that we just want to keep in Algiers. We're going to take it to Mississippi. We're going to take it to Alabama. We're going to meet with the progressive communities in those areas that is doing wonderful and noble work without the recognition that we are getting in New Orleans. We're going to meet with them. We're going to make sure that I never speak on anything without mentioning the hardships that they are going through, and that we're going to work together. We're going to build a type of collaboration that's going to make sure that it's not just Louisiana that is big deal in an environmentally sound way, but it also will be that social and economic upliftment that all poor people in the Gulf region can benefit from, can use as an opportunity, that it will not no longer just go to the rich, whether they're black or white, because you have many well-connected blacks that is capitalizing on this too. So, again, it's time for us to call a spade a spade. It's time for us to say that no longer will it be tolerated regardless of what color you are. And it's time for us to talk about making sure that the progressive community of this country understand that the time is now for us to put together whatever petty differences or whatever ideological differences that we have to put this aside. It's time for us to stand up right now for peace and justice, if that's what we are all about.
Well said, well said. Well, let's see. So we've solved three or four angles. Do you want to give you mentioned last time we talked, you had mentioned there was a fellow down in Algiers that was offering 10 acres to be used for stationing of rescue supplies. Is that being used?
Wait a minute. Offer.
Well, I think you had mentioned that there was a landowner down in Algiers that was virtually begging the National Guard or anybody to come down there, and it wasn't like he was going to give away the land, but he was going to allow that land to be used as a stationing for rescue.
That wasn't me, Dave.
Oh, okay. Maybe I had heard that on another interview and confused it with you.
Yeah.
But in any case, I'm just wondering if there's a marshalling area that...
I'm going to tell you, if we had 10 acres, we'd be putting dome housing within them, because right now we are building places. If we just had the city support, we can make sure that some people can come back to the city. We'll build a housing. We'll build a temporary lodging that can hold people until the city can come up with a real plan on how they're going to deal with the rebuilding of New Orleans. But what we're saying is that the time now, even though the way I feel is, you know, I could put my feelings on the side if we are talking about rebuilding this city and rebuilding in a way that is conducive to all its residents, not just a segment of its residents. But it's time now that we come together, you know, and one of the things that I'm asking everyone to do is to call for a federal hearing.
You know, those are...
If we could call for and have a federal hearing and investigation simply because Clinton is supposed to have been and had sex in the White House with an aide, then why can't we call one to have a full investigation on what happened with this hurricane?
Oh, yeah, much less how did Michael Brown, the head of FEMA, escape scrutiny? He becomes one of the under chiefs for Homeland Security. Homeland Security didn't even study his own resume, and he becomes one of the top officials for Homeland Security. How did that? That's amazing. So, but you know, that gets into whether or not it was sabotage again. But one thing that we had heard, and I don't know if people made it down to Algiers, you're certainly aware of Burning Man. And we're wondering, it's my understanding that just as the hurricane hit, Burning Man was closing down for the year. And, of course, they have plenty of solar and all sorts of biodiesel and alternative energy sources, wind power. They bring their own wind generators and whatnot. And they set up that little temporary city of Burning Man with a lot of alternative energy. I'm wondering if many of those people came down.
We're inviting them now.
Okay. Well,
inviting them now. That we want them here. We want them in New Orleans. We want them in Algiers. We want them to come up in the city and work with us, because it is time that we make sure that when we rebuild, fossil fuel dependency is not paramount.
Sure, sure. Well, I've been hearing also that many of the people that were trying to get down there have essentially found this huge perimeter of other people that have been devastated. So many people are helping out in the outlying areas, but they've never actually gotten into the city. So, you know, it's not to say that they didn't make the attempt, but they've essentially stopped. And as say, for example, with Diamond Dave in Waveland, you know, was that 50 miles away or upwards or something? It sounds like as we were talking about, say, for example, refrigeration in Mississippi, if someone came down there with a whole bunch of solar panels, and there weren't enough solar panels to go on everybody's home, but if there was, say, for example, a meat locker in the middle of town, you know, you could at least power that meat locker, and then people could keep certain of their food, you know, come up with maybe just like a gym has got a whole bunch of metal lockers. You could have a freezer unit, a walk-in cooler, and then every person in town could have their own locker within the major freezer unit, and then the solar could keep at least a good portion of the food safe, so that people aren't burning up daily, you know, the minimal amount of money that they've got. But this whole idea of getting sustainable again, looking at the traditional ways of storing food, drying it, you know, whether or not we don't necessarily want to get it back into salting food again, but drying it, canning it, a variety of different things to mason jars sounds like might be a real smart thing to start sending down there. Alternative energy sources, and getting the senior citizens definitely involved in teaching the young again how to live the real life.
Oh yes.
Hey, well, it must be late out there. It's going after 11:30, going on midnight out there. We'll let you take a nap. We'll try to give you a call in another week or so.
Okay. Yeah. And, Dave, listen, any time that you want me on, that's all you have to do is just tell Sharon that that you want me on the show. And I don't care where I'm at. I'm always here.
Oh, our best, man. You've always done great work. It's funny, I was talking to somebody else about you the other day, and they were describing some other excellent work you were doing, you know, 6 or 8 years ago, long before I even knew you. So you've been a hard worker.
Well, you know, this has been the dedication of my life has been toward peace and justice.
Oh, just an endless project.
That's right.
Hey, it's great. You know, it's good talking to you. And give our best up there in Ithaca. Ithaca's quite a city. It's apparently they've been as a university city, but they've also had a real tradition of I think it's called the Burnt District up there, and that was kind of a famous breakaway area of
Burnt,
B-U-R-N-T, in the early days of American Christianity, say like 1840 or so, apparently, you know, we hear this expression, free love, and, you know, it's through the hippies in the 60s, it was given a certain, intonation. You could just go down to a bar and grab somebody and have at it. But in the 1840s, the free love movement was actually one in which before that, you had arranged marriages, and you couldn't marry outside of your marriage or out of your religion. You couldn't marry, of course, out of race, and you couldn't marry out of. You had to marry who your parents decided, and so the idea of freeing love. There were about four different ministers that somewhat independently came up with the idea of freeing love, and so that people could marry who they really wanted to marry instead of. And so apparently Ithaca is kind of in the heart of that, the Burnt District.
All right.
And so they've had this kind of an independent streak for a century and a half or so. And so it's Ithaca is kind of famous in its way for a number of different reasons. And so it's they have an independent streak in a number of different ways. You might be ready to catch on to some new ideas that you hadn't sparked your imagination
All
before.
All right. Well, listen, thank you, Dave.
Hey, no trouble. We'll give you a holler in another week or so.
All right.
All right. Okay. Peace be with you.
Okay.
Night.
Hey, bye-bye.
And great hearing from Ithaca and good Malik Rahim. He's a hard worker, never ending. You can hear the exhaustion in his voice. He's probably done 10 interviews a day for the last 2 weeks, but you know, it's coming to some good use. We're hearing any number of good stories about how a number of these different efforts are coming to really good flower. So